Are you looking to modernize your veterinary practice by offering virtual care to pet owners? Fortunately, there's an easy solution from the podcast sponsor, Medici. That's M-E-D-I-C-I. Medici is a telehealth solution built for veterinarians. I've made it easy to check out Medici with a link in the show notes, or you can head over to their website, medici.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. Medici lets you text, call, and video chat with clients with their easy-to-use app. Send or receive images and videos of pets, stay VCPR compliant, and get paid, which is always a wonderful thing, for delivering convenient care right from your phone.
Hi, this is Dr. Aaron Smiley, and I've offered telemedicine to my clients since I started. In 2017, I integrated paid telemedicine with Medici.
Ready to go virtual? Visit medici.md, that's M-E-D-I-C-I.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. And with that, here's the show. Welcome to the Veterinary Success Podcast. My name is Isaiah Douglas. I'm joined by Dan Routh. We have another great radio show for you today. Dan, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Excited to be back on the show. It's been a few weeks since we've been on, but I know you've been traveling and I feel like I've been in wedding after wedding this fall. So good to be back and back to normal.
Yeah, and I know we were going to try to record last week and then we were both sick. So it's just one of those things where timing, not ideal, but I think we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. And congratulations on being a published author now, right? So we'll touch on that. You want to share what you were recently published in and the topic?
Yeah, it's probably too flattering of a compliment there. But no, I had submitted an article a few months back to DVM360 and their personal finance section. I know you, Isaiah, have been on a few times earlier this past winter and spring for a number of articles, but yeah, I'd submitted a topic, reached out saying, what hadn't been written about in a while. So I chose the really exciting topic of disability insurance, which isn't really fun to write an article about or even plan for, obviously, because that's a pretty unfortunate thing that pops up and that you have to discuss. But I felt like I have a good angle to write about it just because Isaiah and I, we both are fee-only financial planners, so we don't actually sell insurance. So rather than this article coming from someone who is licensed to sell it, which means they would get a commission off of the actual process of selling it to someone, I figured it would be good to write about it since I kind of have a impartial look at it kind of from an independent third party. So I wrote about disability insurance for veterinarians, specifically what to look for when they're evaluating their insurance policies. I've done a number of these over the years for clients in all industries, but specifically medical. It's really important, and essentially other highly skilled professions. I mean, the big takeaway is doctors of all kinds. They went to school for 7-8 years. They did internships, residencies, fellowships. You've struggled for a better part of a decade to finally get where you're at. The least you can do from a planning standpoint, if you graduate from vet school, get your first job, please look at disability insurance, short term and long term. So I'll just kind of give you the highlights of what I wrote about. But at work, you'll probably have the option in your benefits. You'll have either short term disability, and then potentially you also have access to long term disability insurance. The main difference is disability insurance is supposed to replace a portion of your income if you can no longer go to work and do what you're supposed to do at your profession. 1 in 4 people who are over the age of 20 will become disabled at some point before they turn 65. It's a quarter of people. It is a staggering percentage that most people just kind of look at it and say, that's never going to happen to me. But disability insurance, it's meant to be there kind of as a safeguard. You can only replace about 2/3 of your income, about 60% or so. Because obviously, if you replaced all your income, there's no incentive to go back to work. But short-term disability, that is often provided through work. It covers your first 60 to 90 days after the incident that makes you become disabled. So it's going to be kind of that short-term period. Sometimes if you don't have it through work, the best solution to this, or even just an alternative in general, is just to have a really good emergency fund. So 3 to 6 months, you probably heard that before, having cash saved up for your fixed expenses. So anything that's recurring every month that you know you're going to have to pay, like rent or a mortgage, car payments, student loans, your groceries, other insurance. Obviously, you don't need to factor in your visit to DSW or some of those other discretionary purchases, but kind of the set items. But long-term disability is the really important one. Most people can get through a short-term issue, but long-term is really the hard part. And that's what kicks in after 90 days or 3 months after your injury or illness or disability. But long-term disability insurance, it can come in a couple different forms. You can get it through work, through a group policy. So just like group health insurance or group life insurance, it's covering a bunch of you, which has its positives or negatives. In disability insurance, it's going to evaluate you based on your age, your health, your gender is a really important one. And so it's going to cost very different for different people. And the benefits are and company that you go with is also going to be different from the next person. So long-term disability insurance, it can cover you for a few years. So group policies sometimes will provide benefits for 3 to 5 years or maybe longer. If you get a policy yourself privately outside of your group policy or just standalone, you can have those benefits go all the way to age 65. So you're 30, you've been working for a couple of years, have a disability event, you go through your 90-day waiting period, you're still disabled. Those benefits will kick in and then pay you 60% of your take-home pay all the way to age 65 as long as you remain disabled. So it's really important. I mean, protecting your income is probably ground zero for planning stages that you can at least take advantage of. It's not very expensive. Usually it costs about 1 to 3% of your gross income. So, you know, you're already saving your 401k, probably hopefully at least 3%, getting a match. So another 1 to 3% to protect that said income is really important. But the three main things you should be looking for when you evaluate your policy is it going to pay benefits for you as a doctor and not require you to go get a job doing something else just because you have the ability to? So that feature is called own occupation. So what it does is, you know, you went to school to become a veterinarian, maybe specifically a surgeon. If you can't show up to work and perform surgery specifically, it will pay your benefits, even though you might be able to get a desk job within a vet clinic or go become a engineer somewhere else or take a sales position. If you can't show up to work every day and be a surgeon, be a vet, be an internist, whatever it is, it will pay your benefits. So that one's really important specifically for doctors and other, this one's a little more generable, but insurance policies have what's called a non-cancelable or a guaranteed renewable rider. And what that does is essentially says, as long as you pay the premiums, the insurance company can never cancel your coverage. So as long as you've paid for it at the end of the year, every month in and out, they can't come in and say, oh, we sold your policy off to another company and we're not going to cover it anymore. So as long as you pay, it's there. And then the third, most probably equally as important, is just income adjustment. You're going to get raises every year. Inflation eats up at cost of living every year. What this does essentially says, for a set period of time, you're allowed to purchase additional coverage. So it's still going to cost more, but you won't have to go through medical underwriting to get additional coverage as long as you apply for that within the first couple of years. So this is really important for veterinarians who are still in training. So you're in residency, you know, right now, maybe you're making 30 to 40,000, but you know, within 2 to 3 years, you're going to come out and you're going to have a board certification. You're going to be making, you know, close to six figures or over six figures. You want to be able to increase your benefit, because 60% of 30,000 is a lot different than 60% of 120. So just certain things to look for. Taxes are also important to consider. Essentially, if you pay for your benefits, or if you pay for your policy, it's going to be tax-free to you. If your company pays for it, so it's a group policy and it's coming out of your paycheck every month, and the company's paying for part of it, it's going to be taxable to you. Why is that important? Well, if you're already only getting 60% of your income, paying taxes, maybe another 15% on that, it's a little bit harder to pay for those living expenses on 40% of your paycheck than it is on maybe 60% that's going to be tax-free to you. So sorry for the fire hose of information. Go read the article, probably a little bit easier. But yeah, it was a fun one to write. Hopefully going to write some more. But Isaiah, kind of what are your thoughts on disability insurance, especially for young vets?
Yeah, so the two things, I think, A, it's a super important topic that a lot of people don't seem to think about or want to discuss because it is an expense and it is expensive, and a good policy will be expensive. Just like you talked about, you're going to have to pay for it, and it is worth every penny because the fact that it can happen to you is much more likely than the whole idea of, like, most people have life insurance, but a lot of people don't have disability insurance, which is kind of counterintuitive, where, like, if you're living, you're definitely going to want the disability. Not saying that you don't need life insurance, whole other conversation. But the two other things I would add to everything that you outlined, first is residual benefit, which is one of those things that if you do get hurt, you back to work, and let's say you're able to function at like 75% of what you used to do, if, let's say, you're getting paid on production or even a pro sal style of compensation, and now you're not able to work as fast or something happened to where you aren't keeping up with the same pace that you had prior, that is something where that residual benefit can kick in and cover you. Now, there's certain carriers that will have different language, but think about it. You know, if you're at 75%, they'll make up that 25%. So that gap, they'll pay to make sure that your income doesn't take that hit. And then the other thing is cost of living adjustments. So, you know, today, if you're getting a dollar, it's not going to be the same dollar that you get if you're still disabled 30 years from now. So that's another thing to think about. And there's usually two different ways that it's called COLA. So think about, you know, a soda or a pop COLA, cost of living adjustment. There's simple or there's compound. You always want to look for something that's more compounded, which will, you know, just like with any sort of return, compounding is going to be beneficial to you. So those are the two other things I thought of. And then the one thing, there are a couple different carriers that will underwrite unisex policies because it is more expensive for a female to get disability. Just make sure when you're doing that due diligence, you have someone that is not a captive agent. Captive just meaning that they can only sell you one policy. So just look at someone that can go out to the world and say, these are your disability options. Just like what Dan said, we both don't sell insurance. We talk about it because it's super important. And there's nothing wrong with people that do sell disability insurance. I work with someone that sells it, and that's what they do day in and day out. But they work with fee-only advisors, and that's kind of their focus, is to not be the person that's overselling stuff, but making sure it's appropriate. Disability is important, something that you need to make sure you get regardless of your long-term goals, whether you're an associate or owner. It's just important to get to make sure you protect yourself.
Yeah, and kind of through the process of writing it, I actually myself learned a couple things, and one of them especially relevant to the vet industry now that it's fairly female driven is disability insurance involving pregnancy and just kind of the process of, if you don't have coverage, you're applying for coverage, or you already have it. So if you're applying for long-term disability coverage and you're already pregnant, you still can do so as long as it's in the first two trimesters. The only disclaimer that comes with it is it won't cover any events related to that pregnancy. But, you know, if you don't have it, I would still say if you're your first two trimesters, go ahead and still go for it and get it, just because it will be important to have after the fact. And then relating to if you already have it and you're pregnant, it will pay out benefits for not the actual pregnancy itself and delivery, but complications associated. So whether it's prior to delivery or after, any complications that would cause a long-term disability are covered. So good to know. And then also, like Isaiah, like you're saying, in terms of looking at different covers or different companies, AVMA offers short and long-term disability insurance to members as a benefit to purchase. That said, it is through one company, New York Life. So I can't endorse New York Life for everybody. It's going to be different for everyone in terms of the underwriting, but if you don't have access to it anywhere else, or if you maybe are having trouble getting coverage privately yourself, could be a solution to look for and get on a group plan. So just investigate kind of all options you have, whether it's through industry groups or your work or independently.
Yeah, and that's a really good point on the pregnancy piece and on AVMA. Two really important things. And the pregnancy piece is interesting. I've heard that other times, but I didn't even think to bring that up. So that's a great piece. Again, there's a lot of different areas within disability to think about it.
A nuance for everything.
Yeah. Thank you. Took the words that I was thinking about, but one ended, couldn't say to spit it out. We also were talking right before we clicked record on a really good tweet that you had. And then we shared a couple different funny stories about maybe splurge purchases that we have. You want to share kind of that tweet that prompted the discussion?
Yeah. I mean, it's topic that, you know, keeps getting brought up over and over again. Someone that I know in the vet world had retweeted it. I can't remember who, but it was a financial blogger had posted something about, you know, buy the damn latte, buy the shoes, buy the purse. And then I saw another fellow financial advisor share it, agreeing with the person, but also adding a tidbit at the end saying, but just know that every financial transaction has either a positive or negative impact. So just be, you know, happy with whatever you're doing. And I agree with both tweets. It's something my wife and I talk about all the time. You know, she's in her internship year, so obviously income is going to be drastically different in a year from now, because right now she's working a lot of hours for what she's getting paid. But every week we go to the same fairly upscale or trendy is probably a better way to say it, coffee shop breakfast place to get breakfast together. She gets a latte. I'm not a latte drinker, but I do enjoy craft coffee. You know, so breakfast at this place, some people may say it's crazy to pay for this much for breakfast, but breakfast for two, no alcohol or anything, is probably $35 or $40. So, you know, you can go to a local diner, get breakfast for two for $12. You get a McDonald's, get it for $6, or make it at home for a lot cheaper. But we do it because we get a lot of enjoyment out of, one, the breakfast, two, the lattes, and also like an hour and a half of just the two of us talking at breakfast. We get out of the house. We don't have our phones. It's built into our budget. So we specifically budget to go to breakfast once a week at this place and spend a lot more money on breakfast than most people should. But that said, that's one of our hobbies. It's one of the things we really enjoy doing. I don't golf weekly like some people. I don't shop. I don't buy new suits all the time. My wife's not really a big shopper either. So kind of the gist of it was, if you have something that you're really passionate about that maybe some people think is very discretionary or extravagant, if you save it in other areas of your budget, there's nothing wrong with that. And more power to you. As long as you evaluate what one thing is doing to the next, go for it. So buy the shoes, buy the coffee. Isaiah, do you guys do anything like that, you and your wife, or can you think of other examples?
I can think of another example. I have another question though. So are you a same breakfast person every week, or do you mix it up?
I mix it up. My wife gets the same thing. So, you know, this is the kind of place that has like the acai bowls and different kinds of lattes. You know, they got salads and, you know, pretty much everything under the sun. The latest thing has been pumpkin spice donuts.
I can endorse that.
So they've been very good.
I definitely do like pumpkin spice. I'm not afraid to admit that. So I'm trying to think the things that we splurge on. So it's a little different with our son around. I feel like we haven't splurged as much. I feel like saying like childcare is kind of where we splurge to make sure that
we have a splurge at this point.
Yeah. Cause it's like, that's one of the things that I don't think anyone would ever want to go cheap on. but no, I mean, for me selfishly, when I think about, people ask me like, what do you do in your spare time? I'm like, well, I work, I hang out with my wife and son, and I kind of watch sports. So for me, I have an ESPN Plus subscription, which is only like $6 a month. So that's my small splurge, because I want to watch my favorite soccer team, which is AS Roma. And the reason AS Roma is a team that I follow is based on going to a game when my wife and I, we went on our honeymoon. We were in Rome. I never watched soccer before, really, and then went to a game and said, I'm going to watch soccer. And now I'm like a huge soccer person, which is funny. Never played, but yeah, that's what I do. So, you know, it's on Sunday mornings or Saturday mornings a lot of times. And yeah, it's just something that I try to catch up on and watch and enjoy it and hang out. So yeah, I agree. As far as budgeting, it's like you can build out whatever it is that there is some give and take regardless of where you're going to structure those things. So yeah, I love breakfast too. I can get behind going and getting a good breakfast.
I figure it's better than going to dinner and, you know, splitting a bottle of wine that might cost dinner and wine might be $100. So 35 is better than 100.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing we're going to talk about, and it's more of, I haven't even shared this with Dan yet, so he's probably going to, you know, learn a little bit about it too. But I was at AVMA, the Economic Summit. I'm going to just run through the notes that I had in the order that they were presented. So it's not always going to follow like a super organized way, but I'm going to try to make it make sense and flow similar to the way the presentations were, but they kind of bounced around a little bit. And so the first thing that really hit me, and we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, is the shift to more of a female driven industry. So 80% of the graduating veterinary workforce today is female. 60% of the current workforce is female. So I thought that was really interesting. And that was presented early on. The number of veterinarians over 60 has doubled the past 10 years. So this was a 2008 to 2018. So you think about, you know, economic slowdown, maybe some of the baby boomers had some savings, great financial crisis, maybe those savings went away or they kind of, you know, slogged through and weren't able to retire. Makes sense. I've seen that across a lot of industries. So that leads to one of the biggest challenges, which is upcoming, is retirements. And it's estimated 50% of the veterinarian workforce will retire in the next decade. So that, to me, again, if you think about, you know, what Dan and I do from the retirement planning piece, there's a big need for quality, good advice there, but also just structuring those owners that are thinking about selling, you know, who do they sell to? How do they sell it? How do they maximize the value of their business? Like a lot of really good, deep, thoughtful conversations around that. So that was a great point. And there are more associates and fewer practice owners than there were 10 years ago. So the practice ownership, pretty steady, slight dip, a lot more associates. So the graph was really interesting to see there. So Dr. Matt Saloy, which is the AVMA data scientist, wonderful presenter, awesome, brilliant guy. Someone I'd encourage anyone to connect with or chat with. If you're on LinkedIn, follow him because he shares a lot of great information and infographics.
And he does.
And he will continue to do that. So his keys for innovation in vet med was transparent pricing, managing labor, marketing, customer experience, technology, business management, and evaluating the service offering. So that encompasses a lot of information, but those were kind of his keys that he shared, and he went into more depth, but I'm not going to redo his presentation here. There's a lot of discussion around behavioral economics, which is interesting because behavioral finance, which is something that I've always found very, very interesting. I know Dan and I have talked about it as well. There's a lot of similarities as far as what they were talking about. So it's kind of consumer behaviors. One of the things is if we hear something and we think we want to take action on it, we usually make that decision within 48 hours. So if you hear people say, oh, I'm going to sleep on it or I'm going to think about it, and it's been weeks and weeks, they've already made the decision. They just don't want to tell you. We call that the Midwest no here in Indiana, where someone will just politely either kind of ghost you or not tell you. It's them politely saying they're not interested. It's a little different than maybe if you're out in New York where people will just tell you they don't want to do it. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. The status quo is a very powerful thing. And usually the decision to offer no change is the decision. We're very social creatures and social validation is a huge part of our core buildup and dynamic. So asking people, so that whole referral business is still alive and well today. And then 99% of our brain processing is subconscious, which is wild how much our body and mind is on autopilot and a little scary. But there was a really good presentation that went into a lot of that. And then the final takeaway was, you know, as an owner of a business and within vet med, is don't be afraid to experiment and try some different things as far as how you operate, how you offer a client experience. See what's working. Make sure you're analyzing it, but don't be afraid to experiment. And they talked about financial literacy and training and how big of an issue there is. And it was more geared towards students. But they said, you know, two keys. First of all, the education is going to decay over time. So if you tell someone in their first year about student loan repayment plans, they're never going to remember by the time they're done. So only share what's relevant today and make it focus on something specific. So make it goal driven. The debt to income ratios, which is something we've talked about quite a bit when it comes to student loans, have actually come down. So 1.8. So again, that's what you owe versus what you're making from a starting salary. So 1.81 versus 2.26. from the prior year. So that's 2019 versus 2018. They talked about some of the new schools coming online possibly being the reason why it jumped and spiked, because there was more people enrolling in a more expensive university program. 85,000 is the starting salary. Projections for employment are great for the industry. Demand is there, and there's a big need for more veterinarians. Delaware and West Virginia are the two states that need veterinarians the most. Thought that was interesting. I don't know how valuable it is, but something I wrote down. Shockingly, 17% of new veterinarians graduating have $0 in student loans. So if you remove them from the student loan pool, just from the average vet school debt, this does not include undergrad, the average is 185. In the market for veterinarians, associates tested higher for lower compassion for their job, higher burnout, secondary trauma for high stress, and some other negatives, which I think we've covered and tried to talk about. But the interesting thing, and this is a little bit of validation of something that I was hoping I would hear in a way, but they directly commented on it. And this was a polling of AVMA members. Owners, by no means were they scoring perfectly, but on average, much happier with their life, much happier with their job within veterinary medicine versus associates. So I thought that was really interesting, where everyone talks about the stress of being an owner and all the challenges. But from a polling perspective, these people were much happier being owners versus those that are associates. This does not break it down, associates that are private practice versus corporate. There's no distinction between the two, just something I thought was interesting. There's on average 2.5 DVMs per practice. The largest growth, not surprisingly, is in practices with over 100 staff members, which would make sense because consolidation, if you think about some of those bigger practices, that's lumping them all together. 4 vet techs to 1 DVM seems to be the most efficient level, although 6 vet techs to 1 DVM is max profitability. There was some pushback on this in the Q&A part. I'm just sharing the information that was shared. I'm not going to go into all the depth of some of the questions that came up because I think there's some interesting stats within the data that was collected, but thought that was interesting because I know that there's been time and time again talking about the lack of utilization of vet techs and how if more practices would utilize them and empower them, they would do better from a just pure financial, but also be able to, you know, take on more high value work instead of doing so much of the work that maybe could be delegated. So that whole idea of delegation seems to ring true. The total output of veterinary medicine in the US is $115 billion, which is a little over 380,000 people working in the industry. So all the different places that veterinary medicine touches. So those are people that work in the industry, people that call on the industry, like just total impact, which is really, really interesting. So it's a large industry. And a study from Purdue shows that 25% of pollers were citing location for a clinic is what mattered most. But they also mentioned that access to their specific vet was one of the most key things, and they were willing to pay a premium for that in regards to both virtual and in-person care. So if something were to happen, they were more than willing to pay a premium to make sure they were able to interact and work with who they wanted if they were local and it was offered. Another conversation was about client experience that helps you compete on more than just price. So many people want to just talk about costs coming down. The experience, people will pay for that. And the consumer enchantment business, there was a speaker that talked about kind of the experience. It's all about knowing what's going on, solving the issue that's there and delighting them at the end of it. And he suggested, make sure you're polling your clients or understanding what it is that they truly want from you. And don't just assume that you know what they want from the clinic or hospital. So that's a high level. There's a lot more data. I thought it was worthwhile. Any thoughts on that, Dan?
A lot of it, thankfully, you know, confirm some of the thoughts and discussions you and I have had about just numbers and, you know, growth prospects within different areas. The interesting one, I know it confirmed your thought, was about the job satisfaction with owners having a higher job satisfaction, which I kind of came on the other side of, just because I know just from seeing people, conversations with you, as you know, you own your own financial planning firm, of just, you have to wear so many hats. So I, you know, just from someone who's not an owner, I would have just guessed that practice ownership involves a busier lifestyle. Obviously income can be higher, so maybe that's a big driver of happiness, because it's more money does solve a lot of problems for some people. But yeah, I mean, just the associate world obviously is busy. You know, you kind of get the short end of the stick sometimes with hours and working a lot for no ownership interest. But I would have just figured just being able to go home and walk away from work every day and not have to think about the other areas of the business might have been led to a higher level of satisfaction. But interesting, to say the least. So looking forward to videos and write-up that you have.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to dig into that data more completely. But I would encourage anyone, if they've thought about going to the summit, that it's a lot of information, but they also had a lot of other outside non-industry speakers to bring in some kind of thoughts and insight to challenge maybe some of the old ways of doing things. And that was good. I thought it was really, really well done. So, you know, bravo to the AVMA economic team and how they did that. So any closing thoughts, anything that you want to share?
I don't think so. I thought it was good conversation today. I think we hit some fun things and important things, to say the least.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We will be back next month with some more information for you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. All comments made on today's show should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. All comments are for educational purposes only. You should talk to your professional team before implementing anything. Isaiah Douglas is the founder of ID Financial Planning and Wealth Management. Isaiah is a registered investment advisor in the state of Indiana. Dan Routh is employed by Old Peak Finance and is a registered investment advisor in the state of North Carolina. The biggest compliment you can give is to share this podcast with a friend. Reviews help the show get found, and Apple Podcasts is predominantly the platform that is how people listen to the show. If you have 3 minutes, love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us an honest rating and review. That will help more people find the show. For all of today's links and information, head over to veterinarysuccesspodcast.com. There you can also subscribe via your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss another episode. Finally, if you'd like more information and insights and have the ability for your voice to be heard, join the private Facebook group. You can search for the Veterinary Success Podcast on Facebook or head over to veterinarysuccesspodcast.com. Scroll to the bottom section where it says about your host and click on the Facebook icon. Then I can let you join the group and would love to hear from you there. Thanks for listening, and I'll be talking again to you soon.